This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer, reporting from Kingsport, Tennessee. We're in the shadows of the Great Smoky Mountains. We're here for an exploration of the town's vibrant economy and fascinating educational opportunities for the upcoming generation. Back in the latter 1990s, manufacturing jobs were disappearing at a frightening rate across America's Rust Belt. Kingsport, Tennessee was a poster child with staggering job losses and industrial manufacturing plant closures. To turn the tide on a shrinking workforce and dropping educational levels, the city established an innovative program to reverse the crisis. Job training enterprises were started, along with the advent of an Educate and Grow program that included 2 years of free college education. The initiative was so successful that the state of Tennessee modeled the Tennessee Promise program on Kingsport's model that also included 2 years of free college education. Kingsport's Educate and Grow initiative was so successful that it was the recipient of Harvard University's prestigious John F. Kennedy School of Government 2009 Innovations in American Government Award. Miles Burdine is the CEO and president of the Kingsport Chamber of Commerce. So here we are in the heart of eastern Tennessee, right by the Smoky Mountains. Tell us about the economy here and the struggles that you have had and how you turned it around.
Our economy now is good. I think what you're referring to is back in 1999 when manufacturing jobs were being lost all across America, and that included Kingsport. And so we had a consultant come in and tell us what we already knew, but because a consultant tells you, you believe it more. And he said, you're a rust belt, and you better do something about it. You're losing manufacturing jobs. Manufacturing jobs are very important to this community. They pay very well, and they multiply to give other jobs. So at that particular time when we were losing manufacturing jobs, we got together and decided we need to do something about it. Several strategies came out. One was a focus on tourism. Another one was redevelopment of our downtown. But the one that came out that was most important was a focus on education. And by that, I mean Keith Wilson, who was then a publisher of the Kingsport Times News, had the idea of let's put our money where our mouth is. We said, what do you mean by that? He says, we're telling our high school students when they graduate, you've got to continue going on to get more skills in order to be more employable. But we don't pay for it. We quit paying when they graduate from high school. So he said, let's put money and make it available for our students when they graduate from high school that will pay for 2 more years of college, either a Tennessee, a TCAT or a community college, wherever it is they want to go. It was very successful. While at the same time, our employers over the years have been looking for qualified employees. So I've got people calling me saying, I need a job. And I've got employers saying, I need employees. But if you don't have the skill necessary to get the job, there was a great disconnect. So the fact that we've got the Educate and Grow program, now called Tennessee Promise, 2 years of college education for free. We now have five buildings offering training downtown. 10, 15 years ago, we had no college students downtown. Now we've got between 3,500 and 4,000 students.
And this model here that started right in town is now around the state, right? It's a statewide initiative.
It is. Governor Haslam has seen to it that Tennessee Promise, which was modeled after Educate and Grow, is now being offered all across the state of Tennessee. It's been very successful. Underneath his Drive to 55 initiative, which means we've got to have more graduates, more with certificates, more employable employees for our businesses. If they want to grow, if they want to locate here, they've got to have the workforce.
So it's working.
Very successful. Very successful, yes.
That's really cool. So you grew up here, right? You were a kid here?
I did. I was born and raised here, left for a long time. And
you went in the Marine Corps, right?
I did. Went in the Marine Corps and didn't know what I had here until I was gone for a while. And typical pay paradise and put up a parking lot. I wanted to get back here.
So you knew when you retired in the Marine Corps, this is where you're going back to. It wasn't a question.
It's a wonderful place to live, especially for a family. I'm older now, but when I moved back, I had a very young family. Great place to raise children. Great place to educate your family, educate your children. A wonderful place to be employed. Great quality of life. It's safe. It's clean. I don't even know where the key to my house is.
Miles, thanks for sharing. I really appreciate it, and I'm glad I met you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. I quickly discovered when I visited Kingsport that it is the passionate engagement of the locals who create businesses, and they do more than just create jobs. They create work opportunities that also teach transformative life skills. At first glance, Bellafina Chocolates appears to be just another small business enterprise with profit as the obvious driver. But when I met the owner, Brenda Barnecki, I was pleasantly surprised to learn that for-profit is not part of her lexicon. Barnecki left her job as a vice president of a Fortune 500 company to follow her heart and start Bellafina Chocolates in downtown Kingsport, where 100% of her profits go to nonprofits. Central to Barnicki's business model is not only providing work opportunities, but also simultaneously teaching job training skills for at-risk Kingsport women. Brenda Barnecki, founder and president of Bellafina Chocolates, not just a chocolate company, but a truly greater good group. Talk to us about your story and how this all happened.
Well, thanks very much for coming and visiting us, Tom. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. In your previous incarnation, Brenda, what were you doing?
So I was actually trained as a chemical engineer and did that for a while in manufacturing. And then when I moved to Kingsport, I started working for Eastman Chemical Company. And I was a vice president at Eastman when I left there to do this. And I must say, though, that I never would have expected to be doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. To be running a chocolate company would have been the last thing in my wildest dreams. Right. But I am so blessed to be able to do this and to come to work on Monday mornings knowing that you're working for free and you're working because you want to be there. Mm-hmm. It's just an amazing feeling. So we are a gourmet chocolate company based in downtown Kingsport, Tennessee. That's just up the mountain range from the Smoky Mountain National Park. We make all of our chocolates here, and we are run a lot like a regular gourmet chocolate company with one major difference, and that is that 100% of our profits are donated to children's charities, and we are largely volunteers and have been since the beginning.
This was a game shift for you.
I had started this up while I was working full-time.
For mental therapy for you.
Stress relief, something like that, yes. Really, it was just a way to give back that was a little more tangible than writing a check. I had been making chocolates for family and friends for 15 years, and everybody would say, oh, they're the most wonderful chocolates I've ever had. So I just started making chocolate truffles and would partner up with local nonprofits, and we would have little sales at free concerts and the farmers markets and so on. I had gotten my kitchen certified by the state, so I would just do them in my kitchen. And that first year, we probably made $2,000 or $3,000 for charity, I'm going to guess. But it was never supposed to be anything more than just a little hobby. Yeah. I loved my job, and I just thought I was going to retire at that company.
And yet, you birthed a whole new creation, a whole new enterprise that has a life of its own. And what I love about what you've done, what you're doing, it's one thing to just generate money to donate to nonprofits. Like you said, writing a check is easy. But taking it to that next level, which you have done, is really cool. And that has to do with empowering and employment. Talk to us about that aspect.
Exactly. So from the beginning, we've been all volunteers. And as the company evolved, we really developed kind of a three-part mission. The first was obviously about donating the profits to the children. But the second part of the mission was about women. So we started to see that the volunteer opportunities were great for women who were in some kind of transition or empty nesters when their kids went off to college. But as the company evolved, I always said that I really wanted to create some positions for women who are struggling and who need a leg up. And so about a year and a half ago, we were able to start doing that. And so we established some paid positions for women who are struggling in one way or another. So,
give us some tangible examples of what a woman might be struggling with. Would it be drug addiction? Would it be criminal court issues, homelessness, what?
It might be all of the above. So it could be a single mother struggling to put food on the table for her children. It could be a woman who has been addicted and has been through a recovery program and is now needs somebody to take a chance on her and give her a job so she can start putting her life back together. It could be a young teenager who has found themselves pregnant without support. It could be a woman who is fleeing from an abusive situation and has nothing but the clothes on her back. So the idea is that we partner up with local nonprofits who help women, and they help identify women who are really ready to transition into the workforce.
So that's the referral system, that how you find them, how they come to you?
Generally, yes. They'll come here, we create a job, a paying job, and it tends to be a place that is more welcoming, more forgiving, gives them more chances than just a regular place of business. But the other really amazing thing that has happened is that the women who volunteer here end up being great mentors. So these are women who have run businesses or been engineers or teachers or stay-at-home moms or, you know, all sorts of walks of life, who have decided to give of their time and share with others. And so while they're packaging chocolate, you'll hear a woman talking to some of these girls about college options or parenting tips or getting rid of the scary boyfriend and ditching him once and for all, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's really beautiful. Yeah.
So some mothering is going on. Yeah.
Mothering, grandmothering, yeah. Sistering. Yes.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about the mission, the philosophy, and where you're at today and where you're on the cusp of going.
So I mentioned we have a three-part mission about the kids, about the women, and then finally to inspire people to do something for others in their own lives. And so by getting the story out, we're hoping that people will start to think about how they can use their skills and abilities and their businesses for that matter. But where we're going is very exciting. So we've been in business for 8 years, and it's been growing rapidly every year.
Started in your kitchen in your house, right?
It started in my kitchen. It stayed in my house until it took over about half of the house. And then we decided enough was enough, and we really needed to get a standalone place. But it's been growing that fast. And every time it grows enough that I'm not really sure what the next step is, the next step becomes obvious to me. So right now, we have a standalone building in downtown Kingsport.
How many square feet approximately?
It's about a 5,000 square foot building. We worked with the great people in city government as well as a bunch of volunteers to take what was an abandoned building, basically, and give it a new life. It's pretty special right now. The thing is that it gives us the room to expand, which is important because we have a big goal. We want to be able to write $1 million checks to charities, and that's plural.
And this is reasonable vision?
I believe it is a reasonable vision. We haven't put a timeline on it, but the way we've been growing, yes, it's absolutely reasonable. To support that, we have just ordered some new equipment. We're adding a large second commercial chocolate line. That's going in this fall. We are also incubating a couple of other businesses, so we're broadening out our product line. But the big thing that we really need to make that happen is we need to get our name known outside of our region.
So right now, your revenue generating is done locally, regionally, right? And that's primarily through retail sales of your chocolates?
I would say about 90% of our customers or our sales originate within 20 to 30 miles of where we're sitting right now. But we do ship across the U.S. We specialize in corporate gifts, so we can put a company's logo and brand on the outside of the gift as well as right on the truffles themselves. We're really trying to get the word out to companies who are already buying something for their best clients anyway. But rather than buying a pen or something from China, we would like them to consider buying some amazing chocolates when we can ship them directly to their clients. And then when the client gets that gift, not only do they love the chocolates, but when they open it, they see that 100% of the profits have benefited children's charities. So the gift is a lot more meaningful than anything else that they can give, I think.
Was it Paul Newman's foundation? They found out about you, and talk to us about that story.
Yes. Newman's own the food company that Paul Newman started back in the 70s, of course, has donated 100% of their profits since the beginning. And they have a foundation that works with them. And they had an initiative 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was, to try to identify other companies in the country who were donating 100% of their profits to charity. And they mounted a pretty thorough search because they found us in Kingsport, Tennessee, and we've been in contact with them since then. They have been amazing at connecting us up with some of their executives when we needed advice on things, and they are also trying to form a network of the small number of companies that they found to try to support each other and really encourage people to use businesses for good in the world. So we've gotten to meet just amazing people through that network. It's been great.
That's so cool. So right now, here now today, how many employees do you have? How many volunteers? And let's look a year or two in the future.
It fluctuates a lot because, as you might imagine, the women who are struggling are kind of coming through here and going on to generally full-time, higher-paying jobs. So we will generally have, let's say, 1 to 4 of those paid positions. But our volunteer base, we have probably a dozen volunteers that are routine volunteers all year round and have specific jobs. But once it hits closer to Christmas time and we start getting busy, we'll have a dozen, 2 dozen people here throughout the Christmas season making orders. Whenever I start worrying about not having enough people, more people come. And that's one of the amazing things about this area is that people are very willing to help each other. And that sense of community shows itself in this volunteer spirit that everybody's always talking about around here.
Let's crystal ball 2 years, 3 years in the future.
So as I mentioned, my goal is to be able to write multiple $1 million of checks every year to children's charities. And I would love for the women that we're hiring and training now, I would love for some of them to grow into those positions, because my ultimate goal is to work myself out of a job. So I would really like it to be perpetual, be generating the profits for the children's charities long after I'm gone.
One more that I keep thinking of ever since the moment I met you is, wow, what could you clone this and have an operation number 2 in Nashville or whatever, or Washington, D.C.? Could that happen? Do you see that in your mind?
Well, it certainly could happen. It's not in my this year mind, but there's probably a couple of ways that we can clone this, so to speak. One is a straight out the same brand, same recipes, different locations, and clone it in that way, which would have a lot of advantages to it. You could have a more local footprint in multiple locations. The other way also is to help, besides inspiring people, also help incubate the next social enterprise that's doing a similar sort of thing.
Like what you have in the background, in the back there is a coffee roaster, and you have another lady that's doing something one-off.
We are incubating 2 small businesses. One is a specialty coffee brand that is the Woven Coffee brand. We carry it on our website also to support Families Free, which works with women who have given birth to drug-addicted babies and also women who, a variety of reasons, have really threatened their families. The second one of the businesses, though, that's brand new, is there's a lady in town who is launching a business to bake French macarons, and she is creating a baking kitchen in our building here, and we're going to do that together as well. In order for us to meet that goal of writing those $1 million checks to charities, the big thing we need is to spread the word outside of our area. So people can go online to bellafinachocolates.com. They can order chocolates online. We ship across the U.S. Also, if there are companies out there that would be interested in corporate gifts, drop us an email or get online and get some information about that. We would love to work with new companies. And also, if there are other media outlets that would like to tell our story, because it is really a beautiful thing that's happening right here, but it's hard to get the word out. My name is Brenda Barnicki, and I'm the founder of Bellafina Chocolates.
Brenda, thank you so much for sharing. What a wonderful, sweet morning. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Amy Margaret McCall, marketing manager with Visit Kingsport, shares some inside tips about distinctive things to do and see in town, including the largest walkable downtown antique district in the entire Southeast.
We are here at Hook and Ladder Moonshine Distillery in downtown Kingsport. Been here since I was 6, so 29 plus years. This is home.
So what are you most proud of? What do you like the most about Kingsport?
We talk a lot about the Kingsport spirit. There's just an element of community here that's like no other.
How do you explain it? Why is it different?
It's been there since the beginning. When you have a neighbor in need, everybody comes out, and an individual or a business comes together to make sure that everybody's doing great, and that if somebody does need something, it's just that spirit. You know, if we have an event, everybody shows up to show their support, whether they're interested in that event or not. They're there to show their support.
What's the population?
54,000.
And what's the draw? It's a very economically viable place. You can tell by the
absolutely
the businesses.
We've got wonderful businesses from your large corporations like Eastman Chemical to the hospital system here, Ballad Health. We just have a lot of opportunities, but then we also have a lot of locally owned businesses. So you've got a small town feel with big city opportunities.
And so why should somebody come here? Why, you know, if you said, oh, Tom, you've got to come here, why should I? What would I see? What would I do?
Well, it's just a great place to relax. We have great outdoor amenities. We've got Bays Mountain, which is the largest city-owned park in the state of Tennessee. So you've got wolves up there in a wolf natural habitat. You've got hiking, zip lining, kayaking, all these things. So if you're an outdoor enthusiast or you just want to kind of have a refresher outside, Bays Mountain has something for you. But we've also got a greenbelt, a 9-mile linear loop around our city that's very accessible, whether you want to bike or run or even just walk with your kids. It's just very conducive to those who want to get outside.
Let's talk about biking, urban biking in town.
Yes.
Is that real popular?
Is it
that-
is, and it has grown in the past years. You probably noticed in downtown Kingsport we have bike lanes, so it's safe to kind of maneuver in downtown Kingsport, but then you can also take your bike up to Bays Mountain, do your mountain biking, or do something a little bit less gear-oriented, and you can be on the greenbelt and just a flat linear trail.
Kayaking right within the city limits, huh?
Right, yeah, we have two destinations, and of course, Grip Outdoors, a great business located right on the Holston River, tubing, kayaking, a lot of water fun, which is really neat. And then we also have Warriors Path State Park. You can actually rent boats there, whether it's paddle boats, paddle boarding, kayak, so just a lot of fun for your family.
And we're right in the heart of downtown.
Yeah.
And it has that old downtown feel.
Sure.
But a real well-maintained and,
yes,
yeah, cultivated downtown.
Absolutely. We saw a great revitalization of downtown about 8 years ago now. The people who've come into some of these historic shells, if you will, they've come in and brought that urban vibe in, but they wanted to make sure that they kept the history intact while bringing kind of a more progressive presence. So a lot of cool places to visit in downtown. We actually have the largest walkable antique store district in the southeast, which is kind of cool. Yeah, so if you're into the whole Chip and Joanna Gaines looking for those treasures, you can walk in downtown Kingsport and see what you can find.
Interesting. So that's a whole another way that people identify and think of Kingsport.
Right, absolutely. We have lots of great eateries down here, places to shop, boutiques, salons. We have a little bit of everything. So no matter what you like, you know, just come to downtown Kingsport and you're bound to find it.
And how about places to stay? You have this giant Marriott Hotel Convention Center.
It's beautiful.
I did not expect to find that.
Right, and
that
the view
here
with the golf course and everything. You've got Bays Mountain in the back. We have a lot of urban lofts downtown, so some of those could be rentable. But as far as the downtown hotel, we don't have that, but we have this beautiful facility, the Conference Resort and Convention Center at Marriott Meadowview.
And you have inns and B&Bs in town?
We do have a few. We do. So no matter what your budget is, you usually can find something right here in the Meadowview corridor. So it's very budget-friendly. Come and see us, and then you can do a whole host of things for less than what you would traditionally spend in larger cities.
Okay, if we had to make a bullet point,
the
reasons to come to Kingsport.
First and foremost, the people here. I think that anybody would be impressed by the Kingsport spirit, as we call it. Our outdoor amenities. We have locally owned shops. We talk a lot about those being authentic and real.
One more.
I would think travel. You know, you come into Kingsport, you really can get anywhere in 5 to 10 minutes. So you're not going to be sitting, you know, on the roadways for 30 minutes to get from one location to the other. That's one of the biggest draws for our sports tournaments. When they come here, they love that they can get to the hotel, to our facilities, 5 to 10 minutes.
Love it. Well, thanks for visiting.
Oh, thank you so much. We love to talk about our city, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to do so.
You're welcome.
My name is Amy Margaret McCall. For more information on Kingsport, Tennessee, visit kingsport.com or check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. We're everywhere. Visit Kingsport.
Reggie Morton and a cadre of more than 300 volunteers in Kingsport came together to restore a classic 1950s amusement park carousel. Central to the restoration process was a contingent of local artists who crafted 32 new animals and two chariots. More than 800 hours was dedicated to carve each animal. Reggie Martin.
Reggie Martin.
And we're here in Kingsport, Tennessee, and we're at a carousel that was handmade by locals, right?
Yes, it was. 300 volunteers, local volunteers, built the carousel. We carved 32 brand new animals for the carousel, as well as two chariots. We've refurbished an old 1956 Allen Herschel machine.
That's what I was going to ask you about, the crankshaft and whatnot, and whether they were mined from an old carousel.
They were. The machinery was a gift to our project, Kingsport Carousel Project, from the Beardsley Zoo in Bridgeport, Connecticut. They had run the old machine for a number of years and started having mechanical problems with it. They put it in storage for about 6 years trying to sell it, but never could. So they found out about our project here and they gifted it to us.
But all the horses, all the animals are new and were hand-carved by locals here.
That's correct. The Beardsley Zoo took the animals off their old carousel and put it on a new carousel that they bought. We ended up without any animals, so we had to carve those.
You are one of the artists of...
I was the project leader, actually, on the whole project.
Did you carve one of the animals yourself?
I carved two of the animals. Woody the horse was my first one, and Roscoe the rabbit was the second one.
And how much time did that represent for you and for each artist to make one of the animals?
One of our animals would typically take 800 to 1,000 hours to carve, and then probably another 100 or so hours to paint.
Then you have the little automatic band in the glass case. Did somebody make that too?
That was purchased from a band organ company in North Dakota. We bought it brand new. It's a great feature to our carousel, I think.
Is that what we hear running in the background, or that's a recording?
That's a recording right now.
Can you make the band machine operate?
Oh, yes.
You want to go turn it on? Tell me, as we're walking, when's the most popular time here for the carousel?
Saturdays are our biggest day. Can you play the band organ again? We'll ride typically 500 to 600 riders on Saturday. Of course, now when the weather gets real cold, it'll slow down. So
right.
We're climate controlled, so it's a great place to come in cold weather. Mm-hmm.
Or when it's raining.
Or, yeah. Or when it's 95 degrees outside.
There you go. Yeah.
One of the most touching aspects of my time in Kingsport was the people I met and visited with around town. Come along and join me for a visit with Dr. Brenda White-Wright. She has a master's degree in storytelling, and she uses her art of storytelling to teach priceless life lessons to Kingsport's elementary school children as well as university students.
Brenda White-Wright.
Nice. I like that. That's a fitting name for you. Yeah.
Thank you. I think it's a great name. Mr. Wright and I have been married for 50 plus years now. So I obviously married Mr. Wright, Tom.
Yeah, you couldn't have made that one up.
I know. Yeah.
Okay, so you have a master's in storytelling. I'm so jealous of you.
Well, Tom, we all tell stories. And, of course, I'm very proud and very honored that I was able to go to East Tennessee State University and earn my master's in storytelling. I got to sit at the feet of some masterful storytellers from around the country as well as around the world, and I learned so much. But one of the things that I learned is We are all natural storytellers. People love to tell stories about themselves, about their families, about their relatives. Everybody tells stories. And those are the ones, those personal stories are the ones that are the most fun.
That's probably one of the things I enjoy most about life. Maybe I'm just blessed in that I bump into other storyteller people, but it's so fascinating to hear their tales. A lot of it's just common, you know, everyday stuff, but yet they tell it in such a way.
And people want to tell their stories, and it's very encouraging, particularly in this age of technology, as you know. And one of the things that we as storytellers try to go into schools and talk with K through 12 kids and tell them stories and teach stories and encourage them to tell stories, because I get concerned sometimes, Tom, that in this age of technology where younger people, so many of them, not all of course, but so many of them, my own grandchildren included, are so into video games, and it takes away that communication that you and I grew up with and listening to our parents and our grandparents and other relatives tell those stories and pass stories down. And so it is a part of Americana that I hope we never lose.
Yeah, and I think it's bigger than that. I mean, it's a part of the human condition forever.
Yeah. You're right. I've had the opportunity to travel some outside the United States, and I always want to ask people about their culture, their stories, how they were brought up in a different culture. And what I have found, Tom, and I bet because you are a storyteller, and the best storytellers are the best story listeners, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that I teach. But the thing that I find in common, no matter your race, culture, age, we all enjoy connecting on a human level. We laugh generally about the same things. We're touched emotionally about the same things. And things that lift you up, guess what? They lift me up too. And so I think the more of these wonderful human stories that we can tell, I think that it will help to bridge these chasms that are so existent in our country and around the world.
Well, I think you hit on a real tender nerve, and that is the fear of the demise of the ability of people, at least in our culture, to talk story. And therefore, it goes without saying that a prima facie mission of yours is to do what you're doing, is to go into the schools and create that spark. And talk to me about some of your time there and some of the sparks you've seen ignited by the kids.
I love working with young people. I do believe that's my calling. But one of the things you just said, we have a saying in storytelling, perhaps you know it as well, it is impossible to hate someone once you've heard their story. And so when I'm in schools, and not only K-12, but I work a lot as a volunteer at East Tennessee State University, and we just try to teach people the importance of listening. And what a great gift that is to just listen, to ask them just a simple, how are you? And then really listen for the answer. And so when I'm in schools and I talk to young people, and particularly they are so interested, it's wonderful, that they enjoy hearing my story about growing up in segregation. And some of them, I can just see their eyes are just huge, Tom, because, and I start out telling them, you know, how old I am, because I want them to know that I come from a different time. And I tell them, I'm going to tell you a story from a different time. A time many, 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 many years ago when I was your age and growing up in Georgia, at a time when we were separated because of the color of our skin. And they just seemed so enthralled to hear those stories about how I couldn't sit where I wanted to sit or I couldn't go where I wanted to go. And then I tell them about the honor that I had of marching in the Civil Rights Movement. And I tell them about working with Dr. King. And I tell them because they kind of know the name, but they can't make a connection. And so that's what I kind of help them do, is to make a connection to how time used to be in our country and how Dr. King led this very powerful, nonviolent, peaceful protest against discrimination. And I tell them those stories and then bring them up to date as to what I'm doing now and my children and my grandchildren and how their lives are so different. And I say, do you have any questions? And almost always every hand goes up.
Oh, nice, nice.
Every hand goes up, and they just ask all kinds of questions.
Okay, only because I got somebody waiting to take me away, which means I have to come back to to see you again.
This was the introduction.
Exactly.
But okay. The stories never end, as
I know.
You know.
Okay, but before we go, your time back in the day, Martin Luther King and whatnot, if you had to distill it down to one memory to share with the kids, what would first come to mind?
The first thing that comes to mind is education, number one, because I encourage children, get as much education as you can. Stay in school. Do your best in school. I get that college is not for everybody, but I tell them every time, every day you're in school, you're building your future. And I tell them, and that's what Dr. King preached to us, that what we're trying to do, it's about providing equal access, first and foremost, to education. Because as you know from our history, black people initially, it was against the law to teach us to read and write. And so it's something to never take for granted, but to take advantage of every opportunity to learn. And every time you meet somebody, just as I've met you today, is a new opportunity to learn.
I love it. Okay, well, I'm coming back.
You have to come back. Thank you for coming.
Oh, my God.
We're so proud of Kingsport, and the Kingsport spirit is alive and well. It's a great place to live.
In one moment, because you've been here, what,
45 years? 45 years, yes.
And you still love it as much as when
absolutely.
You first came.
Absolutely. Since that first day, and I told that story, and I won't tell it again, but the first day we moved here, we saw that this place was going to be a place that we could call home. And 45 years later, we still do.
I love it. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you. My name is Brenda White Wright, and you can check out my website at Wright Approach. That's W-R-I-G-H-T approach.net. Friend me on Facebook, too. I'm also there. I would love that.
I will do that. All right, I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Tennessee. We'll see you here when we come back to visit Brenda.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.
The underbed music, Whistling Asheville Blues, was performed by 5-time Grammy Award-winning musician David Holt.